Yeah, there's a lot to be said about bringing people together. And it's, you know, it takes us to, you know, that's why they call the heart of the home the kitchen. The heart of the home is the kitchen, you know. You know, if you look at anyone, the first thing they want to do is they want to see what the kitchen space is, what does it look like, and is it functional, and when you have guests over, what's the first thing you do? You're entertaining from the kitchen. And so food ties people together, and doing things together, it's beyond just the sustainability of making sure we have what our body needs as in nourishment. It's something even beyond what you can put a finger to, right? And so that's a beautiful thing. Now, which brings me to the next question. You know, it's really neat, because, you know, I was looking on Facebook and something just kind of went by, and it was a beautiful little blurb with Daniel. And Master Daniel was making a comment about how 2020 to 2030, you are going to see more people start drinking more and eating less. And then from 2030 and beyond, we're going to be living on energy. And I thought, wow, I love this. So, you know, again, it brings us back to food. I would love for you to share some of that, Agathy.
Now I have to comment on Daniel's. you know, it's so funny. And I agree in a sense of what Daniel's saying with that is that the energy is changing and our refinement is changing. So yeah. Food is a very, not as effective way of getting energy into the body as actually being able to use or utilize the energy that is all around us. I think we are at that crossroads, are at that point where humanity is actually changing, and we are learning, and our vibration is actually changing, that we do not need as much like solid food that we can sustain. And when I'm saying about sustaining, is about still getting all the minerals, right? Still getting everything that the body needs. And going over the idea of if I don't eat, I don't get what my body needs, which is, I don't know if there is research yet.
Yes.
Demonstrating that, but it is possible. And there have been a lot of people on this planet that have done so, right? So changing your diet or arriving at a point where you need less solid food and more liquid will also assist your body, right? And then at a certain point, I sure hope that we arrive at that point where we can pull the energy that the body needs from all around us, because there is life force energy around us, there is prana around us all the time. It's just that we haven't learned to utilize it and use it in our body. And that makes, you know, our vibration of the body will change, the vibration of our thoughts are different, the vibration of our emotions are different. So it takes into a bit more delicate place or state of being, right? Which we are growing into that.
Yes, yes. And there's a lot of, I mean, Hawaii, I think you probably have a lot more, you know, foods which are very easy on the system, right, Chris? You have tons and tons of fruits.
Well, actually, before Daniel said that, I was already doing soups, a lot more soups. Mm. So I would pretty much like have a liquid shake, I'd Vitamix up something like bananas and a protein thing, and then I would just have a soup, and that's really all I would eat. Actually, I love my potato chips back then. And so I actually noticed, my, just because I intuitively eat, I guess, I'd noticed that how much I loved soups and how much I was just enjoying soups. Mm-hmm. And then I actually have found myself, eating much less and putting on weight. So, and I thought initially, it must be pregnancy, pregnancy weight.
That's
they
right.
Say that husbands put on pregnancy weight with
they
their
do.
Wives. And I did notice, I was like, wow, I'm eating less. And I'm a certified personal trainer, right? So I studied the nutritional side, and I studied the, you know, I actually would do calorie counting, because I was like, this is really intriguing. Is it just simply about calories and I'm putting, have I changed the mix? And am I too low? Am I eating too little food that my body's gone into like what we call starvation mode, where your metabolism just completely drops? But I was actually, you know, you can't be on starvation mode and putting on 5 kilograms, you know, over a very short space of time. And so I've actually noticed myself now, I'm actually only eating one meal a day, which is at nighttime. And I'm probably only taking in about 1,200 calories, but my body or less even. And my body is consistently putting on more weight. Each time I weigh myself, I'm now at 190-ish, which is like, you know, I've never been this heavy in my life. So, you know, and I'm still eating a bit of solid foods. And I'm like, oh my goodness, what's going on here? So there is something that is shifting. I don't know what it is. It's not reflective of traditional science. Mm. I don't quite understand it. And so there is definitely something happening. I can't explain it scientifically. You know, but I remember, like, you know, when we're in the dark room and we're fasting for that whole time, and, you know, all those elements of pranic living and breatharianism and all these sorts of things, it's like, I think they're probably, you know, starting to come to the surface more for me now, because as I'm eating less and less and less, and I'm continuing to put on weight, and it's not fat weight, it's actually muscle weight, because I work out every day. I do about, you know, an hour at the gym every single day, and I have plenty of energy. I'm using my energy. So, like, you know, I'm eating maybe 1,200 calories a day, but I'm working out quite intensely. And so I'd be burning that too. So it's like, where's the extra energy coming from? where?
Yeah.
You know, so I would be, in the traditional scientific sense, in a calorie deficit.
Yeah.
Net calorie deficit each day and putting on weight. So there's, you know, there's definitely something going on there. Maybe it's the kawaii food, but I mean, there's, you know, I probably don't think that's the case, because I see a lot of kawaii people around and they're, you know, very stick thin. But,
well, we want a full report, Chris. You're the test subject and you're the test subject, and we want you to really dig deep on this one, because you know what, there's a lot to be said, because to actually be a personal trainer, know so much about diet and exercise and calories and you name it, and then on top of that, you know, you're doing the experiment you know, with yourself. I mean, what a great subject to actually have to go through this. Like, why are you putting on the weight? You know, like, yeah. What is it going to take? No, you got to live on prana now. And it's, you know, there's a lot of questions to actually, and emotionally, do you feel anything? Do you feel emotionally, different or anything?
I'm probably the most neutral I've ever been. Wow. Just, when you do a lot of inner work and you consistently keep doing it and you're finding the triggers, what triggers you, either into repulsion or attraction, whether it's in your relationships or it's in what's happening in the world. And you go, what's creating this trigger? Why has this emotional charge arisen? And you start to heal that, go back to the core and go, where has this come from? And you go and, you know, heal that, whatever has caused the trigger. Then you find yourself just more neutral in all of your emotions. Right, it's not that you don't feel them anymore. You still feel happy and joyful and playful, but they just ride in waves. But the things that happen out in the world, or you know, right now, and all the divisiveness and where we're heading towards, the you know, the trajectory of what's happening in America and etc., is it doesn't really charge you, and it's not being numb to it. It's not saying, oh, you know, that robotic numbness of, you know, how, let's say, a soldier goes into war and has to really go numb, right? Because people dying left, right, center, you're forced to kill people. What are you supposed to do emotionally? You, it's a coping mechanism to go numb. So I'm not saying I'm numb to what's going on. I feel it, but it's different. It's like this neutrality, you know?
Wow. Is it an expansive feeling? Like, do you feel expansive? I always feel like when you're eating more wholesome foods like fruits and vegetables and eating really healthy and watching you start to expand. Like you're just like radiating, right?
I've never thought about it that way.
How about you, Agathy? I know, because if you had consumed a lot of the fruits that were grown locally, you probably, or did you not tune into that?
One of the things that I noticed when we were in the dark room, I think it's very interesting, is that we, because of the emotion that it's attached to the food and the taste and the ideas. Otherwise, and I think that's the thing that keeps us attached to food, right? In a sense of, and it's been like, there is a lot of science behind emotional eating and, you know, how this affects lives and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it's very interesting because it's very subtle. Like, even if you have a healthy lifestyle, even if you have like a balanced eating pattern, right, you still notice that you are, sometimes you are looking for certain things because of the emotion that this creates in you, like the pleasure, the taste, the I don't know, maybe you're feeling stressed, you want to eat something. So there is always something related to that. And what you realize, or what I have realized in the dark room, and it was one of my first experiences, I remember telling Daniel about it, was that, you know, you can recreate the taste. You don't need the food. You can recreate the taste because it's already there. It's already in your system, right? The neurons already know, everything in your body knows. So if you actually stay in that moment, you can recreate the taste of, let's say, chocolate in your mouth. And you feel that you have chocolate in it. Like every receptor responds in the same way that you would have chocolate in your mouth. So it's so many things that are connected with, you know, people feel, as you said, like you are connecting over food. Do you need to connect over food? Not necessarily, but you could connect over food. Like, it's not a necessity, but it's something that we do. Like, traditionally in Cyprus, even Middle Eastern and Greek cultures, you sit on a huge table, there is food coming, you know, mezze, like small plates of food for 2 hours. Who can eat for 2 hours? And, you know.
I remember, yeah, when we were in the Cyprus on the School of the Heart tours, the food was, I mean, I think I put on 10 kilograms on that trip. It was
nonstop food.
It was just, it was plate after plate after plate after plate. breakfast buffet, lunch buffet, dinner.
Oh my.
It's Egypt too. Egypt as well. Because really? It's very similar. But it was, yeah, I mean, oh, wow. And this was all plant-based food. So it's just eating. So,
wow.
Yeah.
But you know what I'll tell you? You go on a holiday and you say to yourself, this is it. I'm going to have the best routine. I'm going to wake up early. I'm going to do my meditation, do my workout, do this, do that. And I'm going to eat healthy. Well, you know, half the time when you go on a vacation, you know, depending on where your vacation is, there's no way that you're going to really change, you know, even 60% of your eating habit. There's just absolutely no way. Because you are not filling your day with other things that you could be doing. And so when you go to a place like Cyprus or you go to Hawaii, well, of course, the food tastes better. You've got to consume more.
I think we overdid it on that journey. We had a lot of mezze there. So it was like a lot. I remember people, you know, at the end of the journey, oh my God, it's so much food. It's still coming. You know, it's like, oh, I cannot eat anymore.
I think we were all rolling out of the restaurants. You could have pushed us like whoosh, and we would have rolled. I mean, there was not one single meal that I don't remember feeling like my stomach was about to explode. Just wow. Because I felt bad, and this was an emotional thing that was coming up for me. I felt bad that there was plate left, you know, that was left over. And I just remember my mum who, you know, from childhood, who would say, think about the children in Africa who don't have anything to eat. And that was what, you know, these are the things that go on that part of the emotional healing thing.
Yes.
Like there's even something deeper in our ancestry, which was, you know, all the famines through war and having food is a sign of wealth and luxury, and eating rice and eating the staples is like, oh, that's very poor, or that's, you know, that's what you eat during famine time. So, you know, people, it's like there's these emotional things that are unhealed. I think this is that emotional part of this food where, you know, but it's hard. You're sitting in front of a plate of food and it's so tasty. And you're like,
go? The aromas of some of this just make your mouth start watering. Yeah. So you're salivating and you're thinking, but I'm not hungry.
Yeah.
But, you know, and so it's amazing how alive the senses come.
Yeah.
The senses become so heightened, you know. You don't want to have that fruit, but I'll tell you that when that room smells like that fruit, you're going to go and you're going to go into that fruit, even when you don't need it.
Yep. And then the last course is always like dessert, and it's so yummy. How could you resist?
Okay, when it's a new place, it's a new country you want to taste, but it's, and we wanted everybody to try all the different things that, you know, a country has to offer in regards to, you know, flavors, and because it's also cultural, right? What you eat, how they prepare food. As you said, like, you know, there was war. Like my grandfather's time, I was hearing stories that they had no food, right? So they bread and if they had bread, it was a very, very difficult time, at least for their family. So, and then you go and you have all this excess, because that's an excess of food, because nobody can eat that much food. So what are you trying to show? Abundance and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But it's an emotional right thing. I think that we are going over that in a sense of finding the balance in it. And I think once we, you know, listen to our bodies, I was, after my first session, I was raw for a year almost. And I was just having fruit. So nothing fancy, you know, sometimes, you know, raw, it became fancy and all this stuff. I find that's very heavy. Fruits and salads. And it wasn't that I decided that. It was that my body said, that's the only thing that I need at this time. So I had, so the desire left. And that's another important thing for, I think, for everybody to realize that if you have desire of eating something and you're fighting yourself, that you have that emotion that you're suppressing, you know, and all this, and there is an internal fight. But the moment the desire goes, and I'm not saying give in to every desire, right? Every day I desire to have an ice cream and I'm eating every day ice cream. But in a sense of you have to acknowledge certain things in order to go behind them, realize the root of it.
Yeah.
So when that desire goes, and it's the same for liquids, it's the same for prana or using this life force energy. There is no thought. I think, I feel from my perspective that it should be done at that point where actually everything is aligned into that, in a sense of, you know, physical, mental, and emotional. So there is no, because that's when you get everything. That's when you're going to get the nutrients. That's where you're going to get everything else. So that moment where you actually don't need to eat anything else, you have no desire of eating anything else, and at the same time you are healthy and you're, you know, filled with energy and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, there is definitely something that is shifting and changing on a global scale, because I have spoken to individuals that are very unconsciously living life, and they have noticed that foods that they were never interested in eating, all of a sudden it's like become a part of their desire to eat every day. So someone who maybe doesn't have a sweet tooth all of a sudden has a sweet tooth. Someone who really didn't like potato chips all of a sudden has to have a potato chip bag every day. And so it's really interesting to really be mindful of what you're feeling and wanting, and then really sitting with it and then mindfully eating. Because let's face it, the Western world requires us to be very scheduled, you know, everything has to be like clockwork, including eating, right? You're permitted to eat within X number of minutes, right? Whereas when you look at, you know, the Eastern cultures and communities, they don't have that. I mean, is it, well, in Europe, don't they shut everything down at lunchtime? Like everybody go and have your lunch, right?
Yes, they have lunchtime. Yeah. Like you have breaks from, I don't know, 1 to 2 or 12:30 to 1:30 or something like that. Yeah. And that's the time you can eat.
Yeah. And so it's kind of nice that you're not pressured and you know, okay, this is lunchtime and I'm not going to go banking and I'm not going to go do this or that. Whereas in the Western world, you know, I remember growing up, you know, you couldn't do banking and liquor stores were closed on certain days, and none of that works anymore. It's free for all, you know, work all the time and eat all the wine, all the time, drink all you want. it's amazing that you consciously have to make that effort now.
Yeah. And it starts with babies. You know, people say, oh, you must make sure that you feed your baby, you know, wake them up during the night and make sure you feed them every couple of hours and this and that, and every couple of hours make sure they're eating. It's like she doesn't want to eat. She's sleeping. Yeah. My baby's sleeping through the whole night, every night. What What are you supposed to wake them up every 3 hours just to feed them? It's like, come on, guys. This is something, you know, it starts from a very young age. These things, you should be doing this. You should be doing that. Yeah. Taking away from, you know, the mother's natural intuition of, you know, when the baby's hungry, there's milk in the breast. It's related. It's like there's this bond that exists that you don't need anybody to tell you how you should be, you know, how you should be treating or behaving with your baby, you know. But we seem to like, you know, listening to experts, you know, but we forget we're the expert. What about us, you know? What about, you know, and I think this is the same thing. Like, we've had our intuition taken away from us, that part of ourselves that is the expert of our own life, you know, and the leader of our own life, taken away from us as early as childhood, you know. And then babies, as they're growing up, you need to have breakfast, you need to have lunch, how hard is it sometimes to get kids to eat breakfast? It's because they just don't want to. It's not part of their schedule. They're not hungry. Why are we forcing them? And so when we get force fed, you know, consistently, it becomes emotional. Because why? We're being told to do something we don't want to do, and that hinders. That's like, it hinders us. It's a limitation. And we keep repeating it, and then we keep repeating it to our children, and then they repeat it to their children. So I think what we're finding now is this return to, you know, the undistorted intuition of being experts in our own body. That's kind of what we're discovering. And
isn't it interesting that you know, we can go on a journey in a conversation which starts off somewhere and it does this full circle and takes its own course, and it's just a beautiful unfoldment of the times that we're in.
Yeah, what happened to talking about traveling?
Self-decided. That was sad.
Didn't want to talk about it.
We started off talking about it. No. I wanted to know about Cyprus and Hawaii. And then all of a sudden, I guess it was supposed to be more to do with the food and our attachment to, you know, food in so many different ways. But it was beautiful. I loved what Daniel said. I was just like, yes, I got to get more info on that one, because everyone out there is speaking about, you know, juicing and doing smoothies and doing soups rather than doing, you know, all the, you know, the food that everyone's eating. So it's really nice. And I love that he's ahead of the curve and bringing that out, that, you know, you've got to get on board.
Yeah. I mean, still, I see in Kauai, a lot of the Hawaiians are going to the supermarket and they're filling up on all the processed foods, you know, even though there is such beautiful fruit and vegetables here. Still, the overwhelming majority is buying, you know, sugar-filled cereals and colas and, you know, that type of style of food.
Oh.
Supermarkets,
they're so outside, like, the world, like, you know, nature, and then you have this box that has packages in plastic.
Yes.
And then that's your food, which is not food.
Yeah.
So when we were living in England, I don't know, maybe I didn't notice it in Cyprus as much, because we had fruit markets that are huge and there's fruit and all this stuff. So in England, I remember going to the supermarkets. Everything was packaged. Everything was in boxes. Everything was like dead. That's the feeling that I got, was dead. And I remember thinking, oh my God, it just looks so bad and terrible. I don't want to buy anything from here.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, coming here to the island, because we have so many choices and so many farms around us, is like, this is heaven.
Yeah.
But I'm watching at my son how he changed from moving, you know, the different places. And then what you're saying, Chris, in regards to, you know, what they choose, like Angelos would, if you put him somewhere, he's going to go to, okay, he's going to go to packages, he's going to go to sugary stuff, he's going to go to things that, I don't know, maybe when I was growing up, we had, but it wasn't as excessive as it is today. So you see like a whole society that's what they know.
Yeah.
Whatever is going on in the US or even Canada, in Europe is totally different. Food, I was watching these videos about the same kind of, you know, bread, how many additives it has in the US and what's the difference between, you know, Europe. So there are so many different things, and it comes to our culture. Like if you're living in a huge city with millions of people, the only thing that you do is go to a supermarket. Your child would know that the strawberry comes from, you know,
strawberry plant.
So it would be in such a case.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing though, but you know what? I know for myself, I'm amazed at the beautiful work that the new parents are doing, you know, that are consciously parenting, consciously trying to allow for the development of the children to understand how important nature is and how we're so interwoven with each other. One could not survive without the other. And that's the beauty of it. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's a whole nother topic and theme.
Yes.
to go into. What does conscious parenting look like? It is an art, I think, you know. But it
definitely is.
Yeah, I like our baby was not born in a hospital. She was born at home into water. We had a water bath. There was, you know, we had a ceremony. We had water that was from a spring, a natural spring that was brought. And so it was like a lotus birth, like completely natural, placenta's left on. It's completely different to a hospital experience. And I think it, you know, these things all add up to, I guess, like, you know, our child is so zen. So incredibly zen, sleeps through the night, barely cries, barely fusses at all. I think it's all related. You know, I've only had one child, so I can't really say maybe it's the type of soul she is, but there's something about a really gentle birth.
Yeah, gentle journey into here. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. You know, the old country, I know that's what they did, is everything was done at home with a midwife or, you know, and I'm sure Agathy, it was the same. But we can leave that for the next episode, because yep. I think that would be awesome.
Yep. We can talk about birthing.
Yeah. And you can give the male perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yes. I think, yeah, that would be really... It could be very interesting, because I would say I'm a very different father. I mean, I went through all pregnancy symptoms. I had nauseousness, and I'm never nauseous. I had weight gains. I could feel deeply and was experiencing what was going on, except for the belly going out, you know. And I'm
that did go out. Remember, you gained weight.
And yeah, I gained weight. I just didn't have nothing came out. Nothing came out of me.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be a very interesting perspective of.
Let's do that next time.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Awesome.
For rescheduling. Thank you.
And just so all our listeners know, you can find us on theschooloftheheart.com. And right now we've got a whole bunch of online workshops. What else? We've got one-on-one teachers that can lead you through heart imagery. and you can reach out to us, find out all types of information. So check out our website.
Thanks.
Ciao, ciao.
Bye.